Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 18 of the weekly Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson, and he, Ben Hobson.
Hello.
Each Tuesday, we'll be bringing you the latest news and views alongside an in-depth interview with an inspiring runner.
Coming up, we have the marvellous Mimi Anderson, who will be discussing ultramarathons and why women often beat men in the longest of races. Mimi is a multiple race winner and world record holder, so it's a true honour to have her on the podcast.
Yeah, no, it is, absolutely. Ben, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I'm technically meant to be having knee surgery today,
yeah,
but I'm not.
Oh,
so I've decided. I'm going down the route of functional strength and conditioning to see how it holds up before people stick things into my knee.
This is weights, is it, or
kind of more just like strengthening it up, like key muscle groups, making sure that all the range, because it doesn't hurt.
Mm.
This is my dilemma. All doctors listening, please tell me if I'm wrong. It doesn't hurt. There's obviously some damage that's happened, and maybe the meniscus has got a tear, but that's kind of healed over time. There's quite a lot of clicking. There's a bit of instability sometimes, but when I run, nothing. Right. When I'm walking, nothing. Range of motion's pretty good. So I'm just before someone operates on me, which could end up being like 12 weeks of lying around, I'm going to do my best to fix it.
Well,
maybe I'll rub some, you know, homeopathic remedies on my
absolutely
knee,
right? Yeah, yeah. Well, by the time this episode goes out,
yes,
I will have taken part in the Escape from Great Britain.
Yeah, which I've ditched you.
Yeah, you were going to do it, but the knees sort of taking you out of contention.
It has, yeah.
So for those unfamiliar with the format, it's a race that starts in the centre of Great Britain, which, as any fool know, is a small parish town of Haltwhistle in Northumberland. Without giving away my escape plan, I'll be heading southwards, largely on the Pennine Way. Looks like it's going to rain every day, so much.
I feel like you
to.
Have just given away your whole plan.
Yeah, I shouldn't go on hunting or anything, should I?
Or is he heading south?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, actually, there are different prizes. One of the prizes is it's called the Highlander, and it's the team who go the furthest north.
Right. Well, when we looked at
who knows what I'm doing.
I think when we were planning it initially, we kind of thought Lake District.
Yes, which would be nice actually. Yeah. And there's also a prize for the most elevation gain.
Right.
Which you might actually get on the Pennine Way or go into the lakes.
Yeah, it's true.
So,
hey, well, good luck to you.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much. Looking forward to it, kind of.
So, yeah, you are. That's a fun one.
Yeah, no, it could be good.
You can have beer.
Well,
you should.
Yeah.
All right.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Our guest this week is an ultra-running legend who holds multiple world records. In 2007, she won the Arctic 6633 race, setting a course record that is yet to be broken. We thought we'd catch up with her to speak about why, when it comes to ultra-running, women can often outperform their male counterparts. Mimi Anderson, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Mimi, then, what was your own route into ultra-running and what did you find appealing about these long races?
Well, I think, I think my sort of my route into ultra running actually was total vanity. I wanted thinner legs. And some people want long hair or they want this. I just wanted thinner legs. And so somebody suggested that running was quite a good way to do it. And they lied. You get muscly legs, don't you?
So, that's true.
But I think I discovered ultra running because, you know, when I started running, it was, 1999. So it wasn't normal to actually see people running around the roads. Mm. You know, now you see people all the time. And again, not everybody had a laptop or a computer. So I actually, to be quite honest, when I started on my journey, this is going to sound awful, isn't it? But I hadn't even heard of half marathons and marathons.
Right.
So I was that naive. So when I did start running, I went in and did sort of a few half marathons, which I loved. But when somebody suggested that perhaps we try the Marathon des Sables, which again I'd never heard of, but I loved, she produced this magazine, and I just remember looking at all the photographs of these blistered feet and people running around across the desert, and I just thought, oh, that just looks so exciting. And that's how I started. It was just an adventure for me. I didn't think about the distance or the race. it was literally an adventure because it was so far away from my normal life as a mum with three children.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. I think that the fact that you that the gauge of distance was never really a question. People sort of fret over running certain mileage these days, whereas you just thought you'd get out there and have a run.
I know, it's probably very naive, wasn't it? But I don't know. I just think sometimes, you know, life is about having adventures, isn't it? It's and that to me was just a massive adventure. No, it was fantastic. Yeah.
You've won races outright, and I think more of the conversation tends to focus these days on women's performance in ultra races. Why do you think women like yourself and recently Jasmine Paris can triumph for ultra distance races?
Well, I think, I mean, ultimately, and I'm not including myself in this, but I think ultimately people like Jasmine Paris and various other people, they're good athletes. It doesn't matter whether they're male or female, but they are ultimately good athletes. And I think women do have some advantages to a certain extent in that, you know, we are slightly better organised. You know, men have got, I don't know, I mean, I think with women, you know, we tend to, if we're going into these races or longer events, we're better prepared in terms of our kit and how we, you know, pack our bags and that. We think about things in probably a slightly more logistical sort of way, whereas the men, and this is being really sort of, you know, out there, but you know, the men will sort of, testosterone takes over. They go into these events, you know, they look at the distance saying, yeah, no, we can do that, and but they don't then sort of do the planning in quite the same way as we do.
I think there's you know, real evidence out there to suggest that women are far better at pacing themselves over the marathon distance, and I think that could probably be applied to ultras as well.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think, again, you know, we go into an event and so, you know, we would have trained hard. I'm not saying the men haven't trained hard because they obviously do as well. But again, I think we go out at a much steadier pace and, you know, we sort of, I think we can manage ourselves quite well. We go out much sort of slightly slower and then we can sort of keep the pace up, whereas men would tend to, and again, this is a massive generalisation, tend to go out faster. And then get slowed down completely, you know, so they get much, much slower. Mm. So I think, again, it's all about, it is about the pacing. I mean, I know when I do something like that, when I did the Arctic race as an example, which was 352 miles, I'd never done a cold race before. So I did a huge amount of research into what people do when they're cold racing. And I also had a plan. And so I knew what I was going to do when I got to checkpoints. I knew vaguely how long it was going to take me to get from checkpoint to checkpoint. You know, things are plans are adaptable, but you've got to have something in the first place. You can't just go out and run 150 miles or 200 miles. You can't wing it. You have to, well, I think, have some sort of a plan or a strategy.
Do you also think that women might be mentally better prepared for the rigours of an ultramarathon?
Well, I think we're just made slightly differently, aren't we? You know, you know, people say that it's down to childbirth. I actually don't think that's a load of rubbish. There are loads of women out there who haven't had children and they're equally as good at running. I just think, again, it goes down to the planning and the logistics and our pacing and just being sort of very well prepared.
I mean, again, we're making this into a huge gender battle, which is not necessarily what we want to do. But when you're racing, is there any way... as a motivator to beat the men, is that sort of like something that you see, or do you just see the field just generally as, you know, people to beat?
I think, well, initially when I go out and do an event like that, it's against myself, so I want to see how well I can do against myself. And then actually, you know, you do look at who else is racing. I mean, I know when I did the Arctic, and you know, it was a very, very small field and other races and things, but it was, I remember saying to my husband, you know, actually, I'd quite like to win this race. Mm. And he did say to me at the time, he said, well, how the hell are you going to do that, Mimi? You've got no idea how you're going to cope in the cold or what you've done. But I knew that if I did things right, that I had a chance of doing it. Yet most other people in that event were much more experienced than I was. So I don't know. I mean, I do look at the women in the race, and to see, you know, how I can, you know, do I have a chance of actually sort of beating them? It is ultimately about myself. But if I go out and I've overtaken sort of the various women that I want to take, then actually I don't actually ever think about beating the men. But I just keep on going forward. And actually, every time I pass somebody, you know, it's that feeling, isn't it? When, you know, you're actually having perhaps a bit of a bad time and you pass someone and you think, yes, that's another person down, you know. So it then does become quite competitive. Well, for me anyway.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because a lot of these big ultra races, so the UTMB and the MDS, they're still very male as far as kind of what, you know, the percentages of people taking part. I don't know what the MDS is, but I sense it's probably about 80% men as a field. Would you like to see more women taking on these kind of big multi-day challenges? And what do you think are some of the obstacles currently facing people?
Well, I think, again, you know, it has improved. You know, if you look over that, I mean, again, I don't know the stats and things, but I know a lot of the races at 50 miles have the stats for sort of women entering has increased hugely over the last few years. I think, again, it's very difficult with sort of the 100 milers, all the staged races. A, it's quite expensive. It's time away from work and family. And I know that applies to men as well. But like anything, you've got to want to do these races. I met a couple of lovely young girls the other day who had very young children. And they came up to me and said, you know, Mimi, it's really struggling. They're doing a 24-hour event, you know, to get the training in around the family. They both worked. So I actually suggested that rather than thinking about the mileage, if you only have a window of 3 hours or 2 hours, whatever it might be, go and run for that time so that you're not putting pressure on yourself. So it's finding a way of being able to do your work, cope with your family situation, and getting the training out without making yourself pressurized.
How's your running going, Mimi? What's been happening recently? What plans have you got?
Oh, I'm useless at running now. I am. It's so sad. After America, actually, it was it was quite tough actually after America, because obviously I had to stop because of my cartilage in my knee. My bones were rubbing together, which was causing a huge amount of pain and various other bits and pieces. So I was forced to stop my world record attempt, which is really frustrating. You know, my body only had to hold out for another 13 days, but it just couldn't manage that. So, but because I made that choice to stop, that decision to stop, even though it was difficult, I can still do a bit of running. So, I mean, and I only mean a bit of running, otherwise my knee plays up. So I am cycling now, although I call myself a cyclist. And I'm doing my first triathlon, sprint triathlon, on Sunday, actually, and absolutely nervous as hell. Pathetic, isn't it?
No, which bit do you... Can you swim? Are you a natural swimmer?
No, absolutely useless. I have this fear of water. So a year ago, in January last year, I started having swimming lessons.
Right.
Because I couldn't even put my head in the water.
Right.
So the fact that I'm actually now doing a swim... I know that that's going to be my worst bit. I'm going to really struggle with it. So.
Well, I think it's great that you know, literally taking the dive. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'm all for people riding their bikes more as well, so that's great.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I think, again, you've got to get more women into that. But I think, you know, I think to get more women into, you know, the sport, whether it's of, you know, the ultra running, but, you know, really you've got to start at the grassroots and get, you know, get the youngsters more interested. And you know, the great thing is as well, now you've got the park runs, you've got families getting involved, and if kids see their parents running, actually then it becomes part of what they want to do, or they will do when they grow up. So hopefully that will then continue.
Yeah, definitely,
absolutely.
Mimi, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us on the Run As Well podcast.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And best of luck with the triathlon on the weekend.
I know. Keep your fingers crossed.
All right. Thanks again.
Thanks so much for your
time. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Great, bye.
Bye.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Our local news hound is in the studio with us. Kerry McCarthy, welcome.
Thank you very much. A little heads up, first of all, into what's coming up in the next issue of the magazine, or the one that we're working on currently, which is the August one, out at the start of July. We have a big debate piece going in there. The subject of which is, should medals be abolished?
Ooh.
So we put our feelers out to the community last week, and none of you will be remotely surprised to hear that we had a massive response, several thousand responses. And I reckon it probably came out about 3-1 in favour of keeping medals.
Right. People want that hardware.
people want that hardware, and none of the reasons for and against will necessarily surprise you, but that, you know, that it's worth affirming. I think the reason why everyone wants them is because they weren't athletes at school. Maybe they were picked last in those horrible games of football in the playground where you line up, and this is their chance to feel as though they're doing something, and they want a reward for that. They want a hunk of metal to hang on the wall or keep in a shoebox that says this person has done this thing.
Yeah.
In a way that perhaps a t-shirt or another type of memento don't. And I think those against, of which there were, I was surprised by how many there were actually who were willing to give them up, and those who said actually I turned them down at the finish line.
Oh well, so we won't actually accept one.
Yeah, mostly for environmental reasons, I would say, which I don't think any of us, you know, can argue with. Yep. Perhaps there were, in the future there would be a happy ground of everyone getting medals, but there would be environmentally friendly, you know. I was going to say wood, but then that involves chopping down more trees, doesn't it? So,
yeah.
But also the feeling amongst runners, and this, to be fair, this did tend to be the slightly more talented runners, those who felt that medals should be kept for the top three and age group winners, and that it's becoming a little bit devalued by people turning up, perhaps in some cases walking a race in the more extreme examples, and then picking up a medal at the end. But I think, you know, I think it's an interesting debate, because not necessarily a right or a wrong answer with this. It's just your view is your view.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but mine just are in a box. I mean, I'm not quite sure where they are, because we've moved house. So, I mean, I get them, but at the same time, they don't hold any great like position for me.
Yeah, I've got a medal rack.
There he
is. So I'm going to give this opposite opinion. I certainly, when I started off, getting a medal was this kind of physical proof of like doing a race, and it wasn't like I wouldn't pick a race based on it had a fantastic medal, but I really wanted that medal at the end. And I think I probably am less bothered now because I've got quite a lot, and the rack is like, it's also my wife's medals have gone on the rack, and
there it is.
It's quite a big bit of like,
it's not your rack anymore.
Yeah. So it's just, but I'm actually surprised that like that a quarter of people aren't bothered about a medal. Actually, I think it's a nice bit of physical proof that you've done it.
Yeah, fair enough.
There you go. Two different opinions.
Yeah, good. That was the debate in microcosm. Yeah. Thank you very much, chaps. Moving on. Just a quick one. It's a story that actually happened a few weeks ago in America, and I spotted it on the Runners World US website. And I'm only mentioning it because I found it quite touching, and we are a nation of dog lovers. It was a story about how a woman in Alaska went out running with her dog, which was a shepherd husky mix, I think, and encountered a bear along the trail.
Wow.
At a time of year when bears were not expected, and her dog took on the bear and fought it and moved the bear off the trail into the woods. So it was like, come on, come over here and fight me, out of the way of my owner. And was severely injured and later died, unfortunately. The woman hid around the corner, called her husband, and her husband turned up with a couple of mates and some guns and scared the bear off into the woods. But you know, her heroic dog basically saved her life.
Just more evidence that dogs are better than cats.
Yeah.
Sorry, cat lovers.
Yeah.
That's a phenomenal
But, you story. Know, dogs are amazing. Runner has life saved by dog.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Great story.
That is.
And finally, bit of feel-good fun. It was the Westminster Mile a couple of weeks ago. And Steph Twell, one of our finest track and endurance runners, broke the world record for a mile holding hands with her partner, Joe Morwood. They ran it in 4:50.
Wow.
So for those of us lumbering along under our own steam and using our arms to propel us, they just kind of cruised out holding hands.
It's amazing.
Yeah, 4:50. That's pretty good running couple there, right? 4:50, just casual while holding hands.
Sickening.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, Kerry, thanks very much for coming on.
Welcome.
And,
thanks,
and telling us more about what's going on in the world of running. And we'll see you again next week.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say a massive thanks to our guest, Mimi Anderson, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, interviews, reviews, and everything else you possibly need to know about running, head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Thank you so much for listening. Please remember to like and subscribe on iTunes, and thank you to Acast, our hosting partner.
Hold up. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.